I'm Jason, the creator of the Army Showcase, and today we learn how to create cookie-cutter answers on this episode of the Tabletop Battlefield. Welcome back to Season 4 of the Tabletop Battlefield, the official podcast of the Army Showcase over at www.tabletopbattlefield.com. And here's what I'm going to talk about today. Every now and then, I usually get a question from a listener asking me, you know, how do I get started playing this game? Say, how do I get into Warhammer 40K or Warhammer Fantasy or War Machine or something along those lines. So what I'm going to do is sit down today and kind of break down a little bit of information about each of some of the major games out there, how you get started playing them, how you find players, what you need to get started. So therefore, in the future, basically, if anyone asks that question, I can kind of redirect them to this episode and a specific section within this episode. How things are going to be broken down is that, first off, we're going to do some general advice that kind of applies to all games in terms of, say, how you find players, where you find the various products for games, things like that, some other just basic know-how about that stuff. Then I'm going to break down into, actually talk about five different games for the rest of the show. I'm going to first cover, let's see, according to my list here, first going to cover War Machine by Privateer Press, and then we're going to kind of clump together Warhammer 40K and Warhammer Fantasy by Games Workshop, because they're kind of similar, and how you get started and things like that. Then we're going to go into Heroescape by Wizards of the Coast, the game we talked about last episode. And then finally, we're going to finish up with Monsterpocalypse of Privateer Press. Now, there may be other games out there. Now, of course, there's other games out there, and maybe in the future I'll come back and cover one of those. But for this time around, I'm going to cover War Machine, 40K Fantasy, Monsterpocalypse, and, of course, Heroescape. And if you want one of those specific games, go ahead and check the show notes over at www.tabletopbattlefield.com/podcast. And you can see approximately in the time feed, you know, when each of those things is going to occur. So you can kind of look up there and jump to that part of the show if you want to only look up a specific game. So for the first part, let's get started talking about some general gaming advice for starting a game. So first things first for playing a game. Probably the most important determining factor into what game you want to play is, in all honesty, can you find players for that game? I mean, a game could be really awesome and a lot of fun to play, but if you got no one to play it with, it honestly is not worth spending your money and investing in that and just kind of collecting figures. Unless, of course, you actually want to just collect the figures because they look cool. Or you like painting figures. Or you like doing, you know, non-gaming related stuff as a hobby. In that case, go ahead and do it. Go have fun. Though, I mean, in all honesty, like some of the games we reviewed in the past, they end up just sitting on the shelf. Not because they're not awesome games. They're actually a lot of fun to play. But the reality is that just no one around here plays them, and it's really frustrating. So that's the first thing you want to do, is how to find players. Now, obviously the first and most obvious place you're going to want to check is to go down to a local game store. Sometimes on game store's website, sometimes you got to go in person, but you want to find out when the game you're interested in is being played. Usually, if the game is a common in the area, every game store, say, you know, on one weeknight, they'll host a tournament or host some event. So, you know, every Tuesdays they run Monsterpocalypse. Every Saturday, maybe they run War Machine. And if they have, you know, maybe every Sunday, then they run Warhammer 40K or Warhammer Fantasy, something like that. So check at the local game store to see, you know, when the various games are being played. Now, there's two reasons here. One, obviously, other than finding players. But say if the tournament, if it's a tournament that's being sanctioned by the company itself, if they have some kind of official tournament system, oftentimes the company has some kind of informal representative there, which basically represents that company in terms of, you know, introducing new players to the product, maybe running some demos, kind of showing off, you know, some more details about what you need to know, how to get started in that game. I know Privateer Press has a group called the Press Gangers. That's what they do. They pretty much go from store to store, helping those stores organize events and also introducing new players to the games. Games Workshop used to have something like that. WizKids had, the old WizKids had, you know, a procedure like that for MechWarrior and for Mage Knight and things like that. So that's the first thing. Check your local game stores. Now, just one note about the local game stores, you'll often find that the people who run them are not always going to be the most knowledgeable about the various games. Oftentimes, they just sell the games and not necessarily play them themselves. Now, granted, probably as an owner of the game store, they play some set of games, but it's really just not practical for them to play everything that they sell. So just keep that in mind. The owner of the game store may know a little bit about the product line and what he can and cannot order, but when it comes to actually expecting him to teach you the game, that could be a problem. So that usually leave that up to the local player base to find someone to teach you how to play the game. And if you have a decent player base, there's going to be people who are there who want to teach you it. If you're in an area where, honestly, there's players who don't want to teach new players how to play the game, you may want to go try to find somewhere else. In all honesty, there are stores that kind of have unfriendly player bases. That's unfortunately, you know, kind of a stereotype that can be true from time to time. There are places that have very unhelpful staff I've been to. They kind of look at you crazy and try to ask, you know, do you play this game or can you order this game for me? But that's a whole other story altogether. Moving from game stores in terms of finding players, also check with some local comic book stores. Because some comic book stores do carry certain games, especially some of the collectible miniatures games that can kind of be seen as a collectible product. Obviously, HeroClix, this is a big game that comes to mind. A lot of comic book stores carry HeroClix, and some of them do actually run tournaments and events for that game. Now, one thing to keep in mind about comic book stores, I found out an interesting little story when I was trying to track down the old Monsterpocalypse comic books that came out. A lot of comic book stores use a single distributor. So essentially, the various companies that make the products sell their stuff to the distributor, and the distributor handles the whole, obviously, distribution of getting the products from the company that makes them to the stores. And therefore, whoever their distributor is the one who determines what products are available to sell. I found that a lot of comic book stores use a single distributor, and therefore, if that single distributor doesn't carry the product, then most of the local comic book stores simply could not get it in, which can be frustrating. But like I said, comic book stores can be a place where you can find some collectible miniatures games. You can also check, they may sell other stuff, but commonly it's more of a collectible kind of thing you'll find there. From there, in terms of finding local players, you can check other community sites. I mean, if you go to a school or college or university, a lot of universities and colleges have local game groups. You can check there, see what they play. I know Magic the Gathering is very popular around where I go to school, so is Dungeons and Dragons. You can usually find people to play those. Miniature games, not so much, but you know, other games may be popular. Try other kind of community centers. For example, if you live in a city that runs a community center, sometimes people set up events there. I don't know, maybe you have an apartment complex that runs events where you can meet people. I don't know, it's all sorts of crazy things. I've even seen some local churches do run gaming events. That is kind of a rare thing to see, but I've seen, like I said, local churches host gaming events. So in terms of finding out a lot of these smaller venues, what you may want to consider doing is going online and looking for either the various game forums, but also just general kind of local gaming sites. I know, like, for example, here in the Detroit area, there's a group called the Metro Detroit Gamers who put on gaming conventions about twice a year. You could try to look for places like that. You know, I mean, the best thing to do is maybe go to Google and type, you know, your area, local game groups. There's no really good central site for finding these kind of things. Some game companies, like, no, Privateer Press, they do have, like, areas where game clubs and game stores can sign up, and you can kind of go see, okay, this place sells War Machine. So you can try places, game companies like that, actually have the listings. Though when it comes to actually these online listings, always double check to make sure the entity exists. Game stores kind of have a high turnover rate and unfortunately a high failure rate, so sometimes you can find that a game store exists in Google Maps or in Privateer Press's database, but it closed 6 months ago. So always be sure to double check before you make the drive out to these various places. As I mentioned also, just look for generic miniature wargaming sites. Like if you find places dedicated to 40K or fantasy or whatever game you want to play, oftentimes they have a section in their forums saying you can, you know, organize events here or look for local players here. Sometimes they break down and then into states or cities or regions like that. That's mainly a lot of the general advice in terms of finding products for games and how to find players. One last little note, if an independent game store doesn't carry the said product, always be sure to ask. Oftentimes, if, say, War Machine or some fancy flight games or something are not very popular in the area, they probably won't, you know, regularly stock them, but they can oftentimes special order them. And of course, if for some reason you can't get any kind of local, you know, products, you can always go online. There's plenty of places online that sell these products. Oftentimes, they do sell them cheaper than local game stores, so they don't have the same overhead that, you know, an actual physical brick and mortar store would have. Personally, I prefer to buy my products from local game stores if it's all possible, and only go online if I simply can't find them around here. But you know, that's my personal preference of how I like to do things. But eBay is a great source, especially for finding old, out-of-print materials. And just general, there's a few main online stores you can go look up and see if they carry the product you want. So with that, let's go ahead and dive into the specifics of each of the different games, how to get started, what kind of products you want to look for, and a little more details like that. So the first individual game, we're talking about War Machine by Privateer Press. This game is probably about 6-7 years old at the time I'm recording this. It's currently just entering its second edition, which actually creates a little bit of messiness for new players. I'll explain a little bit about that in just a little bit. This is a fantasy steampunk universe. Essentially, it's sort of-ish, maybe in terms of comparing to our time frame, it might be around the 1700s-ish, maybe 1800s probably, where you got some steam engines and a lot of explosive cannons, you're getting basic rifles. In addition to having swords, spears, and typical those kind of soldiers, except there's also a lot of magic. How this game breaks down is you've got a single warcaster, or maybe multiple warcasters, who are very powerful combat wizards who lead your armies. And they control the kind of iconic warjacks of the series, which are steam-powered, magic-controlled robots that stand around 10 to 12 feet tall and kind of smash through people, smash each other, all those kind of things. So in addition to your warcasters and warjacks, you've also got units of infantry, like swordsmen or riflemen, who support your troops. And then you've got solos, who are kind of standalone, super sort of hero characters that run alongside and are just fight by themselves, not as units, but they're not, you know, but they're still normal, generally normal humans, or one of several other kind of common fantasy races. So, let's pick up the rule book that just fell over. So how you get started in this game is, War Machine is probably sold by most independent game stores, and if not, Privateer Press does have relationships with a lot of different distributors, so chances are, even if your local game store does not carry War Machine, you can go ahead and probably special order it from them. So like I said, if they don't carry it, they probably don't have a lot of people playing it, you might want to pass it up, but this really is an awesome game. It's something you're interested in. Of course, it's a miniatures game. And how you get started is you want to get what's called a battle box. The battle box contains one warcaster and about two to five warjacks, depending on the faction. They clock in at around $50, and it gives you not only a few figures to get started with, but it's also going to give you a quick start rules guide. It'll let you get playing pretty quickly and get, you know, a lot of the basic rules down for using your warcaster and your warjacks. From there, once you've got that taken care of, you want to get the full rule book, which will cost you around $30. This is the most recent rulebook here. Let me hold it up. This is the War Machine Prime Mark II rulebook. Now, the one thing, this is where it gets messy, because there's a couple additions to the game. Let me show you also the battle box while I'm at it here. Now, you want to make sure, though, I guess you'd say, when you actually start buying products for this game, you want to make sure you're buying the Mark II products. Because you could very easily end up with, say, an old Mark I, or which is the first edition of the game, which, while the rules are similar, the stats have changed, and the Mark II is a little bit less complex. So you want to make sure the product you're really buying is actually a Mark II set. Fortunately, in the case of, say, the Battle Box, if you do end up finding that you bought a Mark I set, all the Quick Start rules and the stat cards for all the Battle Boxes that are available for each faction, which, by the way, there's one Battle Box for each of the four main factions, the Retribution, the Fifth Faction, does not have a Battle Box out yet. Those stat cards and the quick start rules are available on Privateer Press's website. So like I said, if you do end up buying a first edition box set, go ahead over to privateerpress.com and download the latest rules. Then once you've got the main rule book, this is $30. It gives you all the rules for warjacks, warcasters, the solos, the units of infantry, cavalry, and a few other unit types, like using mercenaries and things like that. Plus, it's got a whole bunch of background information on each of the main factions, the history of the world, a number of the units that are kind of the, would have been always kind of common core units of the game, and also it's got a section showing you how to paint figures, how to build some basic terrain, show you some cool battle pictures, things like that. So it's a great second step into the world of War Machine. From there, you're going to go ahead and either buy basically boxes of units, and figures, or you're going to be buying individual blister packs. Here, for example, this is a unit box. This is the Signar Trencher, so it's kind of a common infantry unit. And now, most of the infantry units have a box set like this, which contains whatever would be their core number of figures. Usually it's around 5 to 6 for an infantry unit, but it kind of varies from unit to unit. But they'll contain basically enough figures to field a minimum legal unit of that type, usually which is one sergeant and a few other basic troops. And then you can expand on these by either buying another unit box set like this, or you can buy smaller blister packs. The blister packs are, as you would assume, little plastic blister packs that have one or two figures each and kind of expand on what you get in the unit boxes. You also then have warjacks, which of course are the giant robot things. They come in blister packs, and the blister packs are where you're going to find the metal warjacks. So some of the older figures, actually I should say, most of the figures in Privateer Press's line are metal. Originally, the game had the tagline, play like you've got a pair, or put down the metal and go play with something made of plastic as a way to insult Games Workshop. But since then, they've actually started producing a number of plastic figures. So some of the newer warjacks that come in these kind of boxes are going to be the plastic warjacks, where if you find the old small plastic blisters, those are going to be actually have metal warjacks to them. You see here, for example, this guy here is the Defender Metal Warjack, and right next to him I've got the Defender Plastic Warjack. That sucked. Fortunately, that figure just exploded in lots of little pieces, was held together with magnets, so I can just re-stick him back together, which I'm going to do right now. That's embarrassing. Okay, let's try this again. And then this here would be the plastic Defender piece, which I've restuck together. Now that's a basic overview of the actual product line. Oh, the one last thing that I don't have here because I haven't got one yet are called the Force Books. Each of the main factions has basically an army book that talks about all the units that were available as of like January, maybe end of January 2010. I don't know the exact time frame. But it basically has all their stats for Mark II, histories, and more detailed information about those armies, as well as what they call theme lists, which are kind of very fluff-based lists that if you build in a certain way, you get advantages in battle. Now, let me go back to talk about the whole mess between Mark I and Mark II. As I mentioned, War Machine's currently in transition period. The second edition just came out in January 2010, officially. So, you may end up finding that when you buy a box of figures off some game store shelf, they're still going to have the Mark I stat cards in them. Which, the way you can tell the two apart, the easiest way to tell a Mark I stat card from a Mark II stat card, look at the point value of the units. Mark I stat cards have all sorts of crazy point values. They're basically on a 150 point scale, where they'd range anywhere from about 5 points to 150 points. Mark II, on the other hand, I think the most expensive unit is only 11 points. So if you've got a couple cards and, you know, they're really low point values, let's say 3 to 6, you've probably got a Mark II stat card. If you're looking at point values that are, you know, in 70, 80, 50, 100 range, you've definitely got a Mark I stat card. Now, if you end up with units that have Mark I stat cards, say you bought a box happened to be sitting on the shelf for 6 months, there's two things you can do. One, you can go over to Privateer Press's website, and they sell the individual stat cards for around 50 cents each. Or you can go out and buy the 2010 faction decks, like I got here. This is the Signar one. This pretty much has all the stat cards for Mark II for all the figures that were released up until January 1st, 2010. So therefore, this basically updates all your old stat cards to the Mark II stat cards. Now, in terms of gameplay for War Machine, War Machine is a somewhat fast-playing miniatures game, depending how you play it. It's intended to be very aggressive. You get in your opponent's face, and you beat them down. Some people like to describe it as a collectible card game in miniature form, because really, army construction is all about building the most sickest, most disgusting army you possibly can. And if you read what's called page 5 in the rule book, it's kind of the, quote, etiquette of War Machine. It talks a lot about the idea is you build a very powerful, very disgusting army. It's often described as, yes, your army is thoroughly broken, but so is your opponent's. Go to town and see what happens. So keep that in mind. There is a lot of, holy crap, what just happened to my guys feel to playing War Machine. So it's not so much more of a traditional tactic style where you've got actually more traditional, more historical-esque tactics. It's like I said, it's all about putting together deadly combos and watching them execute nice and perfectly and just totally owning your opponent. Of course, always do that gracefully and don't be a jerk about it. So just keep that in mind when picking on War Machine. If you're looking for more of a traditional style war game, War Machine might not be the best choice for you, but if you want a game that's got cool units, a lot of fun to play, and just definitely it's all about, you know, basically power gaming in a lot of ways, War Machine might be the one you want to look for. Next up, we're talking about Warhammer 40K and Warhammer Fantasy by Games Workshop. Now, while these games are actually fairly different in terms of how they play and also, of course, the setting they exist in, the product line and how you get started in playing both of them is very similar. Games Workshop pretty much applies the same, I guess you want to say, economic or product line model to both games. Now, Warhammer 40K is a science fiction game set in the distant future. In fact, it's set in the 41st millennium, hence the name Warhammer 40,000. The idea is pretty much you have the Imperium of Man, who's basically besieged on all sides by all sorts of aliens, demons, heretics, rebels, and other just frightening, terrifying, horrifying creatures, and humanity is basically desperately trying to struggle against all these external alien threats. It is a very dark, very depressing universe, and it's actually incredibly violent. So maybe if you have some younger players who are interested in playing games, maybe Warhammer 40K might not be the best for them, but I want to leave that judgment, of course, up to you. But I would recommend reading some of the fiction behind it, because some of the stories and other events are very violent, very bloody, and very depressing. But let's go ahead and just give an idea. Let's read the very last line of the opening page of the Warhammer 40,000 rulebook, which it says, "But the universe is a big place, and whatever happens, you will not be missed." So like I said, it's a very depressing, very dark universe. Warhammer Fantasy, on the other side, it kind of takes place in what I call a super token-esque universe, and that is, you've got your usual fantasy races, of course, there's humans, orcs, goblins, elves, dwarves, etc., 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 things like that. And you've also got a little more unique kind of fantasy races you wouldn't find, say, in Lord of the Rings or some of the more traditional styles of fantasy stories. Like, for example, you have the Beastmen, you've, of course, got who I got out here, the Lizardmen, who are my favorite army, and also you've got the Skaven, which are giant walking rats. Now, in terms of, if you're interested in maybe a little bit of historical perspective, granted, Warhammer Fantasy is not really a historical game by any means, but it plays kind of like a historical-esque style, where you have blocks of units, and they kind of maneuver around the battlefield, they wheel, and they function very similar to how an ancient army might fight. And also, a lot of the factions are actually based on various ancient cultures. For example, my Lizardmen are based heavily on kind of Latin America, or historical Latin America cultures, like the Aztecs, and the Mayas and things like that. You'll see that their pyramids are built just like the Aztecs. They have a kind of a religion structure of actual sacrifice and things like that that are similar to those ancient cultures and such and such. Now, moving on to getting started in these games, one thing Games Workshop has as an advantage over other game companies is they have their own line of game stores. Granted, they call them hobby centers, is their fancy term for them, but they're game stores that sell exclusively Games Workshop products. So go ahead to the Games Workshop site and check to see if any of these stores exist in your area. The one reason there's a huge advantage is because the way they basically have, the way Games Workshop hires people for these stores, they hire people who are interested in playing them, and since their objective is to sell you these games, they're always going to be very eager to teach you how to play the games, and it's going to be always easy to find players for both Warhammer 40K and Warhammer Fantasy. Now granted, Games Workshop also sells Lord of the Rings in these stores, but not a lot of people, in all honesty, play that game. I mean, they usually have a small section for it, and maybe once a week they'll have an event for it. But Warhammer 40K and Warhammer Fantasy are Games Workshop's two big games, and you should really have no trouble finding opponents for these games if there is a Games Workshop store in your area. Actually, I've talked a little bit about how fantasy plays. But 40K is a little bit different. It's a little bit more, I guess, quote, simpler, sort of. There's less modifiers, less charts to look up, things like that, less kind of numbers and stuff to memorize. But still, they're both still very complex games. Warhammer 40K kind of feels a little more like a skirmish-style setting, where you don't have the fixed regiments, granted, troops operate in units, but they're not, like, fixed certain types of movement. They kind of run wherever they want. You've got tanks and vehicles, which operate by themselves, and, of course, big guns and big armor. So they definitely play differently, and if you're interested in sci-fi, you know, go towards 40K. If you're interested in fantasy, try Warhammer Fantasy. But you may want to try both games out and see which game you actually like the feel of the play better. That's a terrible explanation. Anyway, so let's talk about the actual product line here. When it comes to getting started with these games, what the best thing to do, once you've actually decided you want to play the games, find some people who will teach you the game and give them a tryout. Like I said, they're very complex games. Maybe you might be interested in that kind of thing, maybe not. Also, the hobby aspects are a major part of Games Workshop games, so expect to assemble all your figures and also to paint them as well. Now, to be fair, a lot of players don't paint their figures. I'm very particular about that. I generally will not use a figure until it's fully painted, but that's just me. And personally, if you have a fully painted army, especially if they look very similar to each other in terms of, you know, they have a very logical, very, you know, standardized, you know, color scheme, it looks really cool on the table. So once you decide you want to play Warhammer 40K or Warhammer Fantasy, both of them have these nice large starter sets. So for example, here is the Battle for Skull Pass. This is the Warhammer Fantasy introduction set. These things come with, first of all, a mini rule book, which I got sitting over here. The mini rule book, even though it's small, what it pretty much is just a smaller paged version of the actual complete core rules. So you don't have to buy another rule book once you've got these starter sets. They have all the basic rules to the game. In addition, in the words of Games Workshop, these sets come with a crap ton of miniatures. Retailing for about $75, they actually come with probably several hundred dollars worth of miniatures in them. Let me actually go ahead and open up my Battle for Skull Pass here, because as horrible as it is, I never actually got around to assembling most of the figures in my Battle for Skull Pass set. So I can show you them as they come right off the sprue. So I'll hold them up here without spilling them. There you go, you see there's a whole ton of figures in this box set, along with dice, rulers, templates, and other things you need to get started playing Warhammer Fantasy. And of course, the Warhammer 40K one is pretty much the same. Also, you're going to find in here are quick start rules. These are usually scenarios, a little bit of a painting guide, and things like that to introduce you to some of the basic rules of each of the games and kind of get you started playing relatively quickly. Oh, and one other thing neat about the figures that come in these starter sets, they're actually different than the figures that come in the main box sets. The main box sets, normal figures, are actually very detailed how you put them together. You can pose them lots of different ways because you pretty much got to attach the legs, the body, the arm, the head, the weapons all separately. And they do that because, you know, they want you to create dynamically posed figures. The figures that come in the starter sets are actually fairly simple to assemble. A lot of them, you just punch them out, glue them to their base, and go. Some you might have to stick a single weapon on or something like that. They're designed basically to get you assembling figures quickly and easily and get started playing the game in a hurry. From moving on from the starter sets for Warhammer 40K and Warhammer Fantasy, you then got the main master rulebook. This here is the 5th edition rulebook for Warhammer 40K. And these things are huge. They're basically not full color, but you know they are they're hardcover bound rulebooks. They come in around 300 pages. And in addition to having all the rules you would find in the mini rulebook, they've got a whole bunch of background story information about all the different factions, histories about everything going on in the world, and they also have a whole bunch of hobby information about how you can paint some of your figures, building a little bit of terrain kind of thing, some ideas for campaigns, and kind of a quick reference guide for a lot of the unit stats at the time that the book was printed. So if you have one of the mini rule books, these big guys are not required, but they just add a lot of background information to the story. Usually people who own these are either A, hardcore players, or B, they purchased a starter set from a previous edition of the game, and they're pretty much just buying this book because they need the new, latest updated rules. Once you get past the rule books, you've got what are called codexes and army books. Codexes are for Warhammer 40K, army books are for Warhammer Fantasy. They're basically the same thing. Here, for example, I got the New Tyranids Codex and the Lizardmen army book. And you need these books for every army you want to play. So in addition to the core rule book, you've got one more rule book per army you want to play. These books in them, they have, say, the stats of all the units. They have a nice detailed history of the various factions, kind of telling you how they got from the beginning of the universe or how they entered the, you know, their history to the current time. They've got some hobby information about painting figures, some cool little pictures to give an idea how to paint them, what some of the different weapons are. And they pretty much just, all in all, have all the rules you need to play for that army. Because every army in Warhammer Fantasy and Warhammer 40K often has specific rules and specific tactics to them. So keep that in mind, like, especially in 40K, you'll find that every army plays quite a bit different. For example, the Tau, who I play, so I've got out in front of me here, they are a very shooty army. They basically form gun lines and just unload firepower on the enemies. They desperately want to try to avoid close combat. They want to outmaneuver, outflank their opponents, and use their guns to destroy them. For example, the Tyranids, who are kind of my secondary army, I don't really play as, but I have some of the figures, their lot lays the direct opposite. They have some guns, they do fight a little and shoot a little bit, but the primary about charging into the lines is overwhelming the enemy with numbers and just ripping them up in close combat, because they're the bug race that goes from planet to planet. Also, when it comes to Warhammer Fantasy, the various races have different strengths and weaknesses. For example, the Lizardmen, they are basically the most powerful magic casters in a lot of ways. They have the Slaan Mage Priest, who is probably one of the most, if not the most, non-unique character wizard out there. You'll find armies like the Dwarves, for example, are probably the best magic resistance and things like that. And then once you've decided what army you want to play as, it's time to get the figures. Because granted, you're going to get some figures in the box set, but maybe you don't want to play as either one of those figures in the actual, you know, as your full army. So that's where the figure lines come in. This here is a battalion. This is for Warhammer 40K. It's obviously the Tau Empire Battalion. But they make similar box sets for all the races in 40K, at least most of the races in 40K, and most of the races in Warhammer Fantasy. And this is pretty much your introductory box set to this given faction. It gives you a decent chunk of figures to be able to play a small game. And you definitely will save money by buying GW stuff in bulk. Any kind of box set that GW sells is always going to be cheaper than buying the same number of figures separately. I believe at the time of this recording, all these battalion sets are $90 to $100 about there. They kind of raise the price every now and then, so I don't remember exactly what they are. But like I said, they'll give you a force to start playing with. You can often, in the case of 40K, you can often build around a 400-point army, which is a small battle, out of these battalion box sets. Expanding on these, you're going to get unit box sets, as well as individual blisters. The unit box sets usually contain enough figures to add one decent sized unit to your army. The exact number of figures will vary from box to box, because essentially each box pretty much contains one unit of figures, whether that be, say, 12 Ormegaunts, 16 Lizardmen, 12 Tau Firewarriors, or 10 Space Marines. They all are basically effectively one unit, and you're going to find that much in one box. Also, how GW often packages their figures, you'll basically be given a bunch of different options of what you can build. So, for example, with the Crisis Suits here, these little robot guys of the Tau Empire, inside you'll find pretty much one Crisis body and a handful of weapons. That way you can attach different weapons and different equipment on them however you want. So some of the more advanced players who like to swap out weapons do like the Magnetizer guys, kind of like how I had the War Machine Warjack last time. That allows you to swap out different weapons and things like that. Then, of course, you've also got boxes for the vehicles. Now, the vehicles are ranged, depending on the size of them, anywhere from $25 to, like, $50. The Devilfish here is about $35 by himself, but you can often get him in a box set with other figures. The Hammerhead here, or the Tau Hammerhead, is, I think, $42. But one thing you need about the Tau Hammerhead, you can actually, as at the time of this recording, until they redo the sculpts, you can actually get a full Tau Hammerhead in the box with the Sky Ray. So the Sky Ray is another missile defense tank that the Tau Empire had that no one really uses. But if you buy that box set, you get all the pieces for either the Sky Ray or the Hammerhead. So you pretty much can build either one you want. And in fact, you can easily swap between the two then if you buy that box set, which is kind of cool. That's a quick overview of the product line available for Warhammer 40K and Warhammer Fantasy. And when people say, are these games expensive? The answer is yes. The battalion box set started around $90 to $100, But chances are you're going to probably be spending $300+ on a full tournament-sized army. Just keep that in mind before starting this game. It is very expensive, and it is fairly time-consuming to assemble and paint your figures. And, of course, Games Workshop sells an assortment of hobby products, including paints, glues, paintbrushes, green stuff, and other things you need to build and assemble and paint your armies. Just keep in mind, with their hobby products, they're generally very good quality. They're going to be more expensive than similar quality items from third-party companies. So paintbrushes are going to be more expensive, obviously. The green stuff is a lot more expensive than other companies. So just keep that in mind when buying the GW hobby products. They're good quality, but you're going to be paying more for them. So there's a quick overview of Warhammer 40K and Warhammer Fantasy by Games Workshop. Hopefully that helps you get an idea of what you need to get started in the game. So let's move on to the next one. Now let's talk HeroScape by Wizards of the Coast. This game's been around for, I want to say, about 5 or 6 years, but in all honesty, I don't have the exact length right in front of me. Originally, it was manufactured by Hasbro, but Hasbro also owns Wizards of the Coast. And as the game kind of matured from almost like a kid's game to more of a serious hobby game, they transferred control of the game from Hasbro to Wizards of the Coast. Like I said, originally this game was kind of marketed as a kid's game, but it quickly became popular with people of all ages. Now, one thing cool about HeroScape is the fact is it is a really simple, really fast playing game. The rules are probably the most simplest miniature game out there, at least of any of the major ones that I've played. I'm not going to vouch for all sorts of small individual games, but all the major ones I've played, it's probably the simplest rule set. In addition, all the figures are pre-painted, pre-assembled, so you can go right out of the box, start playing, no need to sit down and kind of do a lot of detailed assembly work. In addition, the game has a really innovative map system, where if you've ever seen it played before, you have these giant plastic tiles you can stack on top of each other and build mountains and valleys and little rivers and lava flows and get a really cool, really diverse battlefield set up fairly quickly. And once again, you don't need to do a lot of hobby work. So if you're not into a lot of hobby stuff, maybe HeroScape would be a game for you. Now let's talk about the product line. First of all, you've got Master Sets. Right here in front of us, this is Dungeons & Dragons Battle for the Underdark. This is the most recent starter set. It's actually, granted, it carries a Dungeons & Dragons brand name, but it is a HeroScape game. This is pretty much what a Master Set is. It's more or less a starter set into the universe. It usually contains a fairly large amount of figures and also a decent amount of terrain. So if you're new to the game, you're going to have to pick up a Master Set just so you can basically build yourself a battlefield. Personally, this HeroScape, this new one, the Dungeons & Dragons one, I think it's more feels more of like a large expansion than an actual Master Set. But it still can work as a starter set if it's all you can find. Just be sure if you do go with this starter set to actually look for additional like figures and figure packs and things like that. Now, of course, there are older Master Sets. So, for example, here, this one is Swarm of the Morrow. This one came out in 2007. Yeah, 2007 is when this Master Set came out. It's got more figures, more terrain pieces than the Dungeons & Dragons one. It's also retailed for more expensive, around $40 to $45, depending on where you got it. And even a few years before this one, there was the first Master Set, which was HeroScape Rise of the Valkyrie, which had even more figures and even more terrain than the Swarm of the Morrow set. Though the Swarm of the Morrow set is a pretty good standalone one, but I personally think the best Master Set so far has been the original one, Rise of the Valkyrie. The trick here is I believe Rise of the Valkyrie, I know, is out of print, and I'm pretty sure Swarm of the Morrow is also out of print as well. So if you're going to find these things, they're either going to be kind of surplus merchandise laying around, or you may be able to find them on eBay. So as a result, the prices of some of these sets are a little bit higher than what they were originally because they are getting a little more rare, as they're now been out of print for a while. Now, once you've got a nice starter set for HeroScape, you're going to want to move on to expanding your armies. They sell what are called, I guess you call them figure packs. They pretty much have anywhere between 4 to 7 figures in them, and they range from $10 to $13. Of course, the figures are all pre-assembled, pre-painted as well. And they usually have a common theme, or maybe two themes to them, and they usually fight for one of the two different factions. Or one of, you know, several factions kind of thing, how it works out. In addition, you may find a few pieces of terrain in the box in the army sets, but If you do, you're probably looking at an older set, which actually some of the older ones from the first and second collections are actually pretty rare and are actually kind of worth a little bit of money. So, like I said, normally they retail from $10 to $13, but if it's one of the older sets that are kind of rare that have been out of print for a few years, expect to pay a little bit more. Then you've got large hero packs. These cost around $20 to $25, and they have about four or five really huge figures in them, like Nilfheim the Dragon, or things like that. So we're talking figures that clock in, you know, okay, I want to sit down in front of me, but I don't. But they're figures that are about 6 to 8 inches tall. They're huge things. And like I said, those are $20 for about four to five large figures. Then you've got random terrain kits. For example, here, I've got the Castle Kit. I actually got two of these because I bought one in clearance. But this is actually to build a gigantic castle on the battlefield. And there are also several other terrain kits. For example, there was a lava one that had some lava men. And there's an Arctic one which had some Yeti warriors. There's a jungle one, a forest one. They pretty much had a small selection of terrain. And then they had maybe a few figures go with it. The trick there is a lot of these basic kits are now out of print and are very rare and are worth a lot of money. But if you can find them, they're a great way to expand your battlefield without buying new master sets. And they often have some cool theme terrain. They cool have things like trees and bushes and shrubs and bridges, little lava flows, things like that. But like I said, they're kind of hard to find because they're no longer being produced. Now, I totally skipped over what HeroScape is all about. I mentioned it's a really fast-playing game. But in terms of the universe, it's actually based fairly heavily on Norse mythology. So if you're familiar with the tales of the Vikings and what they believed, it actually takes place in a land called Valhalla, which coincidentally is basically the heaven that was for Vikings. Vikings' heaven was called Valhalla, and actually the way the game works is based heavily on that. The idea is you've got now six generals. There's six powerful generals in the land of Valhalla, which discover things called wellsprings. Wellsprings are these kind of portals that, I guess not really portals, but they're these fountains that when they drink from, they become super powerful. So I guess they're kind of drugs. But the end result is it allows these warriors to basically have visions that stretch across the time and space to also different worlds, different universes, different dimensions, and bridge the gaps between these worlds and dimensions and bring warriors in from basically ancient past to the far future to some weird fantasy world. So that's why in HeroScape you've literally got Roman soldiers fighting alongside World War II soldiers fighting alongside giant robots from the far future. As for example, I think there's like one world that's all dragons, where all the dragons come from. Of course, there's Earth, where you've got World War II soldiers, you've got the Roman soldiers, you got the Matrix guys from the far future, and you've also got a world which is all robots, where there's two giant factions of robots fighting each other, and there's some of them are being pulled in from the good guys and the bad guys. So it's really a crazy, far-out world. If you're looking for something that's kind of has any basis in reality whatsoever, this game is not for you, because don't expect any kind of logical balancing to it. The fact that a Roman soldier can kill a giant robot is kind of funny, but that's the way the game works. The idea of the game is to have a lot of fun, a lot of crazy, cool-looking armies out there that are just really wow. It's just kind of something different than what you're used to seeing for a miniature game. So like I said, if you want something a little more realistic, probably pass this game out, but if you're looking for a fun, quick, simple way to have to play a miniatures game, also a great game to have for kids to play because it's easy for them to learn. And the tactics are fairly simple. It really comes in a lot about matching up your army and building an army that really complements each other, knowing how to use them and when to use them at the right times, all their special powers and things. So HeroScape is definitely a lot of fun, and if you're looking for a cheap, simple game, this may be the game for you. Now, for the last game today, we're talking about Monster Pockets by Privateer Press. This, of course, is from the same company that makes War Machine. And this is a very tournament-focused game. It got released in late 2008, and since then, it's definitely got a bit of a tournament following going, because battles are set up really to be played one-on-one, at least in all the maps they've provided so far. This, in terms of gameplay, this game is a giant parody of Japanese monster movies. Pretty much any kind of monster or faction that's shown up in a Japanese monster movie has some parody faction here. You've got the Guard, which are kind of like the Power Rangers. They fight with these giant robots controlled by five people. You've got giant apes. You've got demons that are basically parodies of the Cthulhu. You've got insects and pretty much dinosaurs. Of course, there's the Godzilla parody faction here called the Pterosaurs, where these giant dinosaurs that walk around destroying stuff. Gameplay is fought within a city. Like I said, it's primarily one-on-one. So each player will control normally one monster. Sometimes there are two monsters. There are rules for dual monster games, but most tournaments seem to be kind of one monsters. In addition, they have a host of little smaller units which run around and basically try to capture areas and control different regions of the map in order to make their monster more powerful. The game pretty much ends when one side's monsters are completely wiped out. And the best part is it takes place in a city, and the city itself is a weapon. It's encouraged to destroy the buildings and attempt to do additional damage to your opponent, because under most circumstances, the only way you can do more than 1 point of damage a turn is by throwing them into buildings, especially when the buildings explode, they do more damage. If they're radioactive waste, even more damage. So it's all about tossing your opponents into lots of buildings fast. The more you do, the more damage you take, the quicker they die. And of course, the units, like I said, they're basically running around, just like in any good monster movie, they die in droves. Fortunately, they can kind of always respawn to keep powering your monster up. So let's talk a little bit about the product line. This is a collectible miniatures game, which frankly, I don't like collectible miniatures game, but in the case of Monster Apocalypse, the sets that get released are relatively small, so as long as you have a reasonably sized player base, you probably can expect a trade to get what you want. Because this game does strongly encourage faction pure play. You get a much more powerful army when you have a nice pure faction than when you have a whole bunch of mismatched stuff together. So players are often going to be encouraged to trade to get the faction of their choice. Now, to start the game off, you want to get a starter set. These retail in for $25. The one I'm showing you right now is from the original series of Monster Apocalypse. The new series is called Monster Apocalypse Now. Yet another parody of movie titles, which a lot of stuff is parodies of various things. The game is one giant parody, basically. Inside a starter set, you're going to find one random monster, a fixed set of, I think, four units, and two fixed buildings, in addition to, obviously, a double-sided map, dice, tokens, and all that kind of stuff you need to play the game. Obviously, if you want to start the game off, you got to get one of these starter sets, because, like I said, it's how you get all the rules and everything you need to play the game. And then to expand your armies, there are two different types of booster packs per series. Usually there's what would be a unit or a building booster, which usually has some of the little guys and one building. And then, of course, you've got a monster booster, which here, for example, is a monster booster. This contains pretty much one monster and it's called its corresponding hyperform, because during gameplay, a monster can kind of power up and go to the hyperform, which is the more powerful version of it. And like I said, the thing is they're all random, so you may end up getting duplicates if you buy a lot of pieces, which for the units isn't such a bad thing, but you can't use the same monster twice in armies, so if you end up with duplicate monsters, you better get used to trading away. Which is why this is a fun game, but in all honesty, to avoid frustration, you're going to have to do one of two things. Either find a good-sized player base where you can trade, or go on eBay, because there are a lot of singles for this game on eBay. For about $50, you can buy a pretty good-sized faction pure army of just about any army if you look around long enough. See, that's kind of the downer for me for collectible miniatures games. I often don't want to buy the blind boosters, and I find myself buying a lot more things online, which isn't necessarily good for the local hobby stores, but it's kind of a negative side effect of these games. In terms of how difficult this game is to play, it actually kind of looks like a little bit of a kid's game, but trust me, it's not. I mean, I suppose younger players could certainly pick it up and play it. The rules aren't too complex. Where the complexity comes from is every unit and monster has all sorts of different special abilities, and you really got to remember all the different special abilities your monster has and how they interact with each other to make you guys really much more powerful. It's similar to War Machine, the fact that it's all about building a very powerful, very synergized force that's going to mow down your opponent. But there's definitely a lot of remembering, keeping track of, you know, how the different powers interact. And there is a bit of a learning curve in terms of deciding, okay, how does these two things work together well? And it can be a little bit of a mismatch in terms of the first time you play the game, kind of debating over how the different powers interact. But Privateer Press is pretty good about putting up frequently asked questions on the Monster Apocalypse website, where you can kind of download and resolve common issues that way. That's basically the basic gist of the game. It's a very simple, very tournament-focused game. So if you want a game that's really easy to expand on, Monster Apocalypse may not be the best choice for you, because the way the maps are laid out, they're pretty much designed to be one-on-one tournament games. Also, I probably should say, in addition to the products I told you about, there are map packs, which add a whole bunch of new maps to the game, as well as, you know, one additional kind of unique building you can't get in the boosters. And then there's also some additional support books. Like, for example, there are strategy guides, which if you're interested in tournament play, those are really helpful because they give really cool advice on how to play the units and how to work to their strengths and how to avoid their weaknesses. And there's also support packs if you want to get more dice, more tokens, more things like that to help identify your pieces and be able to play multiple monster games. They do sell support packs with more dice and things like that in it. And the last thing coming out this summer is going to be kind of a standalone game. It's set in the Voltron universe. So they are bringing some licensed properties into Monster Apocalypse instead of just parody factions. I don't know exactly how the game's going to play out. I believe it's going to be standalone, but it's going to be fully compatible with the current existing Monster Apocalypse line. But don't hold me to that, because that's not coming out to this summer, and it'll retail for the price of $50. So with that, there's a quick overview of Monster Apocalypse by Privateer Press. It is a lot of fun to play. I would recommend trying it out if you're interested in a good tournament game. So that's about it for this show. So let's just go ahead and I'll finish things up. If you have any questions or comments, send them to me at jason@rockosoftware.com. That's rockosoftware.com. And I think at some point in our show's history, we reviewed just about every game I talked about, except I don't think we ever did a formal review of Warhammer 40K or Warhammer Fantasy, because those things are basically immortal and have been around forever. So with that, follow me on Twitter at @TT_Battlefield. And that's about it. So once again, I'm Jason. Thanks for watching. We'll see you again in about 2 weeks on the next episode of the Tabletop Battlefield.